Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Licken, your host of Licken on Landing. Thank you so much for joining us again this week on this program, a first of its kind in the industry. It is dedicated to helping mortgage and real estate professionals stay informed on all that is going on in the industry. We're live here in Atlanta, Georgia, at the MBA, or the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, 97th Annual Convention and Expo. We are going to be here through Wednesday this week, and we hope we get a chance to see many of our listeners and our friends here. We would welcome the opportunity to sit down and visit with you if at all possible. Also, I think it's important to note that we're going to be doing a panel here. I'm a part of a panel, and that panel is Growing Your Market Share in a Down Market. And I'm on and joined by the moderator, Rob Katz, who you hear on this program each and every week, president of Del Mar DataTrack. I'm on with Tom Milan, a president, who's president and of Capital Markets Cooperative, Gabe Minton, chief strategy officer of Motivi Solutions, Inc., as well as Greg Shoemate, president of Brand Mortgage Group. Anyway, come and listen to our session, Growing Business or Growing Market Share, I guess it's Growing Business, in a Down Market. Certainly going to be a jam-packed session, and we've got a lot of great content for you that are here at the conference. Stop on by. We look forward to having you a part of it. In fact, I think we'll bring these guys onto the program, and we'll do a rebroadcast of this seminar or of this session that we're doing later in the month here. It'd be good for all of you to get in on these very good points that we're going to be discussing. Anyway, welcome to the program. This day, Monday, October 25th, we have a special guest from PMI, Mark Foley, Vice President of Home Ownership Prevention Initiative, as well as John Ballard, Vice President of Field Operations, both with PMI again. We also have Rick Harper, Vice President of Mortgage Services and Director of Housing for the Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco. Folks, got a great program talking to you about what PMI is doing, some great programs that PMI is doing to help keep homeowners in their homes and help stem the tide of foreclosures across this country. Great program. You're going to enjoy it. If you're a servicer, you definitely want to listen to this program. We again want to welcome all of our listeners from across the country that listen each and every week, as well as the many new listeners that are joining us each week. I want to make sure that you go to Licken on Lending, www.licken, L-Y-K-K-E-N, on Lending, all run together, .com, and go in, and that'll take you to the Housing Matrix website. And in that website, you're going to have the ability to register in the upper right-hand corner for a special update each week of who's going to be our guest. Go onto the website, www.lickitonlending, and be sure to register for notifications about the upcoming programs. And while you're there, go out and check out some of the rest of the website. There's some great tips and tools and tricks that help you in your business. We appreciate our partnership with Housing Matrix, Howard Voiles, and the staff there for all that they're doing. Now, without further ado, as we do each and every week, let's get into our program and start talking about rates. Joe Farr, what is going on today in the world of interest rates? Good to have you with us, Joe.
Hey, Dave. Today, as I've been saying, it seems like every Monday, rates are up. Our prices are up, rates are down. We've seen a nice reversal of some losses we had late in last week. Friday was a down day. Today's an up day. You know, both the MBS prices are up, not quite as much as they were up earlier in the day, but and the stock market's up too. And it seems as though there's been a favorable reaction to what went on in the G20 meeting in South Korea over the weekend. That was a meeting where investors had some concern that pressure might come on the Fed and the U.S. and their policies to potentially affect that, which could potentially affect their plans for the quantitative easing that everyone has grown to expect. You know, there's a bit of a race to devalue currency, it seems like, as you know, Europe and Japan and now the U.S. are taking on policies that the result will be a devaluation of the currency, and there was a concern that there may be some pressure from other countries. The devaluation of the currency has a number of consequences, or QE2 has a number of consequences, one being a lower dollar, and a lower dollar makes exports less expensive to the buyers and therefore should stimulate both activity here, and then it makes imports more expensive, which adds to the inflationary situation, and that's ordinarily that's something the Fed would fight against, but in fact we've been at such low inflation levels that is the Fed would like to see inflation rise. So the quantitative easing is a big deal. It's been affecting news for a couple weeks now. We'll talk about that in just a minute. The economic news that came out this morning included an announcement about existing home sales. Existing home sales in September increased 10% from August, which is certainly nice to see. The reality, though, when you dig in behind the numbers, is it's still the third lowest level of existing home sales, and a good number of those home sales were of distressed sales, properties that had been taken back or had been, short sales, et cetera. About 35%, according to NAR, 35% of the sales were distressed sales, and so, with all the foreclosure issues going on, and the likelihood and the foreclosure moratoriums and the likelihood of the process being slowed down, those distressed sales might not be available for the market in the months to come, especially looking at what might happen in October, November, to where that might come out of the numbers and impact the overall sales. I mentioned QE2 having a big effect. It had certainly had an effect on today's activity. It had an effect on economic activity all of last week. As we talked about last week, every little economic event has a bigger consequence to not only what impact it has on inflation and economic activity, but what impact might it have on the Fed and their decisions on how to implement QE2. Last week, industrial production fell a little short of expectations, but then the Beige Book came out, and it painted a picture of an improving economy. Housing starts were better than expected. Jobless claims were a little better than expected, meaning lower. So, mixed bag of economic news, and the result of all this has been a very volatile market. We've seen a number of midday price changes, but the quantitative easing issue is building. And Alice, I know that you had you attended a couple meetings there at the MBA and wanted to see if you could weigh in on what the MBA is thinking about the quantitative easing.
Well, it was interesting, Joe, because the MBA's economist, and isn't that terrible? I should have his name right here, and I'm going to get it in front of me in a minute here. He spoke at a couple of the committee meetings that I attended yesterday, and I just found it absolutely very interesting, a lot of the things that he had to share with us. So he was of the impression that on the board there are differences of opinions on the Fed getting back into purchasing treasuries, that there's one opinion of should it be big, get out there with $1 trillion and have a big impact on the market. But the fear is that that's just a quick drop, flash in the pan, and doesn't have long-term positive impact. Another member of the board is making recommendations to have it more be about $100 billion, keep it low and or a low amount of offerings out there. And then, of course, so I start to think this sounds like the three bears, whatever story.
Yeah.
Okay, too much, too little, and is there some place in between that makes more sense? So the MBA's position was trying to keep it more at the $500 billion mark over a six-month period, and then hopefully at that point, it seems like rates would stay as they are. So what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that the market, in fact, I was just watching CNBC earlier today, and one of their guests came on to say that the market has priced in anywhere from $500 billion to $1 trillion in overall easing. if they do it on sort of a short period, $100 billion a month, meeting-to-meeting sort of decisions, I think that in the long run that might get them closer to where they want to be. But all the while, I see that as creating a great deal more volatility as the new news each week becomes or each month becomes that much more important. You know, will it be enough to where they decide not to do $100 billion next time, but maybe only $50 billion? You know,
And was it too little? You know, is $100 billion such a low number that that's too? It doesn't have the same confidence that people would want to see in the Fed's commitment to the market.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, you know, it's a lot. We should know something next week. You know, next week is just simply going to be a huge week. We got, you know, the elections coming out. I guess that they'll come out Wednesday morning, and the Fed meeting minutes will be announced Wednesday afternoon. And then the jobs report on Friday. So, you know, this week it wouldn't surprise me if it were not quite as reactionary as or reactive to economic events as you would ordinarily expect, just because there'll be a lot of people kind of waiting to see what, you know, waiting for next week.
Well, I think a couple other things. Oh, next week,
very interesting.
Yeah, I think a couple other things that he brought up were that it takes about 100,000 new jobs per month to keep, you know, unemployment steady. And he said, you know, we're not there. So it really wasn't a good news picture that they were painting. Their, you know, their final number for what are their predictions for 2011 are going to be announced in the final session at this event on Wednesday. He was alluding to the fact that, you know, they're modifying their predictions again for 2010, that overall mortgage volume is going to be down, you know, between 1.1 and 1.2 trillion, you know, which compares to being at 2 trillion in 2009. So in 2011, he's, you know, bracing us for that. Their predictions are going to be lower than that 1.1. And this year, we were at an 80% refi index. They think about year-end, we'll end up at about a 65% refi index. And for next year, they're predicting a 30% refi index, so a big drop in volume on the refi side.
Yeah, that's huge. But when you think about all the loans that are going to be out there at 4%, 4.5%, it's hard to imagine that people, you know, when you think about all the refis that were done as rates were falling, a lot of those were cash out refis, not only rate term but also cash out, and you know, the rate term refi is going to be disincented, if you know what I mean, as far as next year and the years beyond, when you've got a 4.5% mortgage. You might need cash out, but you're not going to do it in a cash out refi.
No, so, you know, but you might look at a second mortgage, and, you know, no one's offering those today, or hope that there would be a second mortgage product, but there really isn't one out there today.
Right.
So, you know, and a big issue, obviously, is unemployment, and the U6 measure, which is obviously trying to take into consideration not just those unemployment claims, but, you know, the parts around that with the underemployed, those who, you know, have just given up in the process. And he believes that he said the number from the Department of Labor is that that's up around 17%. You know, it's kind of the real unemployment number is much higher than the 9% range that is often talked about on the news.
Right. Well, you know, we're in interesting times, and you know, when there's so much involvement going on that's not sort of natural, it makes for very, very volatile reactions to things that come out. In the week this week, we do have, you know, Treasury auctions that with all the QE2 discussions, it'll be interesting to see how much demand there is for the 2, 5, and 7-year notes that are going to be auctioned this week. And durable orders comes out this week, which is pretty important. And the first look at third quarter GDP is announced this week. So still some important things to look for this week, and the big thing though is going to be next week's elections and Fed meeting. So with that, I'm going to turn it.
Oh wait,
okay.
I want to give you one last thing that they said. The last note that came out, and it was interesting because you brought this up, that it's so unusual that, you know, with QE2, with the quantitative easing, that, you know, the Fed is really not focused on the fact of potential for inflation. And the other thing that was mentioned was that the Fed has never been in a position of hoping to increase inflation, and I believe the date they gave was 1913.
Well, that they're talking about it now, so it is a strange time.
Yes, very strange times.
All right. Well, with that, we'll pass it back and talk to you in the next segment.
Thanks, Joe, for bringing us the update on what's going on in the world of rates. Folks, stay tuned. We've got a great program ahead for you, PMI. We got two folks from PMI, Mark Foley and John Ballard, as well as Rick Harper from the Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco, Cisco. And we're talking about what PMI is doing to help owners stay in their home. Stay tuned. You're going to want to learn about this, especially with all the negative news on there, what's going on in foreclosures. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginny Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Hello, everyone. This is Alice Alvey jumping in here with my legislative update. And, you know, we have been watching a lot of rules and regulations for you. And over this last week, there hasn't been anything specifically new presented or any major changes in the bill. But I do want to run down some important things for you and also give you an update on a committee meeting that I sat in yesterday where Vicki Bott was speaking and giving us an update on FHA. The Dodd-Frank bill, the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, so Title 14 is the part that many parts of the industry are focused on, which is the mortgage reform piece. Within that, there are multiple sections. And so one of the sections that's going to be implemented early is Section F of Title 14, which is the appraisal independence pieces. Now, for community banks and bankers and credit unions who never really had to focus on HVCC, they now certainly have to pay attention to this. For those who were relying on that, well, this is policy I have to follow because it's Fannie and Freddie, this is now elevated up to federal law that I now have to follow, and therefore fines and penalties and consequences for not following it are changing. So it really is something that lenders have to still follow Fannie's policies. We are waiting for some final firm guidance from the Fed on exactly the date that we have to have this implemented. As of now, it does appear to be that it'll be April 1st. We have to be following appraiser independence rules across the board. We're also watching several House bills for you. So the Housing Opportunity and Mortgage Equity Act, we brought this up last week. It is H.R. 6218. This is a crazy bill. It is proposing to require Fannie and Freddie to offer every mortgagor a qualified mortgage. So, in other words, trying to open up that refi market by essentially forcing Fannie and Freddie to offer everyone a qualified mortgage without an appraisal. And it would totally, it's also proposing to completely restrict the fees that could be charged and essentially almost phrasing it in a way that would mean Fannie and Freddie are actually having to implement this as opposed to the origination entities from which they purchase loans. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to work. We'll watch that one closely for you. Another bill in the headlines and just the topic in general is the prohibition of private transfer fees. So there are two bills that go together on this topic. There's H.R. 6260, which is proposing that to just completely prohibit the collection of private transfer fees for all for-profit third parties on all RESPA-covered loans. The other bill is H.R. 6332, and this one is going to require disclosure of the transfer fees. So there was a lot of things in the press that came up and said, hey, customers are getting ripped off. People have these huge transfer fees that they aren't aware of. But the reality is it does seem as more and more information has been hitting the press, and I've checked around with some condo association groups, that they really did feel that most of the transfer fees were reasonable and were managed properly, and that customers, you know, for the most part, were aware of them. And it didn't stop someone from actually selling or purchasing a condo because of the transfer fees. There's certainly, like in a lot of things we deal with, that egregious side of it that has to get solved. So I think the bill needs a lot of work. I think people are recognizing that. And the Washington Post did report that FIFA wanted Fannie and Freddie to prohibit them from purchasing loans with transfer fees. I think as we get more information on this, this is going to have to settle down to a reasonable point and can't just be an outright prohibition. It would be too damaging to the condo markets as a whole. Another bill that we're watching is FHA's proposed rule that's going to expand the lender insuring program, and it'll really change how FHA is able to issue indemnification agreements. Vicki Bott talked about this yesterday in our Residential Loan Production Committee meeting. Those of you who ever have an opportunity to come to the Mortgage Bankers Association conference, the national convention, I can't tell you how valuable it is to show up on Sunday, the early day, where the committee meetings are, because that's where a lot of nuts and bolts information is also brought out. So Vicki came and spoke to the Loan Production Committee meeting. I encourage you to become members of that because you get these kind of one-on-one discussions. She said, yes, FHA is going to look harder and look smarter. They are changing their oversight, and they are going to be coming down harder on lenders. But she said, you know, this is just enforcement that they have to have in order to keep the fund viable. Now, the other part that she brought up that I found interesting, so here on the one hand, she's bringing up that they're going to be more tougher on indemnifications, and on the other hand, talking about they do want to make more clear for manual underwriting. Many of you know that there are a lot of investors who will not purchase an FHA-referred loan. A lot of lenders, as they're looking at getting into DE underwriting, we find a lot of them say, hey, if I'm going to be a new DE lender, I don't want to underwrite. I'm not going to underwrite refers. We're only going to take automated underwriting decisions. So watch for coming up in the coming weeks. FHA is going to have more guidance coming out about manual underwriting. This was in that proposed rule, and FHA is interested in trying to get some more common sense into manual underwriting so that lenders do feel confident. They don't want you to go overboard. Certainly there were the people who abused manual underwriting, but they do want to develop some confidence in it so that it is still a part of the FHA product. Another footnote I want to bring up about FHA is this January 1st deadline where loan correspondents stop having the ability to originate under their own ID number. FHA is going to be issuing a mortgagee letter to talk about that transition. They issued over 90,000 case numbers the day before the MIP changed. So they're anticipating something along that lines of case number piling on, so to speak, at the end of the year, and they don't want that to happen. So watch for a mortgagee letter from FHA that's going to be trying to find balance in that transition.
Hey,
secondly,
Alice?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to change subjects. I wanted to ask, going back to HVCC and the replacement that you discussed earlier on, is there much of a difference between HVCC as we've been operating under and what Fannie and Freddie have proposed and what we think might come out of all the Dodd-Frank rewrite?
You know, I think the main difference is obviously the AMCs will be regulated. And so that is where you're hearing a lot of the, whoa, this is what the dramatic change is all about. So AMCs will now fall under the same regulations as appraisal companies, period, and they haven't been regulated before. You're also going to essentially find that the origination side, you know, no one should be talking to the appraiser until that appraisal actually shows up in your shop, and then it's going to have to be very careful handling from there. So essentially, a lot of the parts are the same. It's just much more strict because now it's federal. you know, and subject to additional oversight.
Okay, thanks.
So the the last thing I guess I want to make sure I point out for everybody is watch for a mortgagee letter from FHA about the geographic restrictions as well. FHA believes they'll be removing the geographic restrictions that currently exist once we have the new rules in place for DE mortgagees and the loan correspondent status goes away. So that is my new update, my update at this point for the legislation, and I'm going to turn it back over to Dave. Thank you all.
Thank you so much, Alice, for bringing us this important update. It's so good to see you here at the conference and so many of our friends. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned to listen to Mark Foley, John Ballard, and Rick Harper talking to you about what PMI is doing to help people stay in their homes and stem the tide of foreclosure. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln, your host of Lincoln on Lending, and it's so good to have you be with us. By the way, thank you so much for the many emails that come to me each week saying how much you enjoy this program. You have no idea. That encouragement keeps us moving on and keeping doing this. We want to hear from all of you, so keep those emails coming. We want to hear from you. And if you haven't sent us an email, send one in. Let us know. They send it to David or D. Lickin. D is in David, L-Y-K-K-E-N, at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. We wish you could be here with us in Atlanta. There's so much going on here, and there's a lot of great sessions and a lot of people talking about their bottom line. And Andy Schell, the profit doctor, has got back-to-back meetings here trying to help people build a strong bottom line and drop more profits there. So, profit doctor, also known as Andy Schell, what is your tip for us today?
Hi, Dave. It's great to be on the Lickin' on Lending show again with the profit doctor segment. You know, it's the convention week, and here at the convention, many are celebrating having a great year. You know, the refi wave that we had with rates dropping into the low fours and into the threes, it's just amazing. A lot of folks had a great year. You know, I see some who are happy to have survived another year, and then there's another group that are worried about the future. They're wondering if they'll survive next year. And, you know, I think there are a lot of reasons to be excited. There's a lot of really good activity out there and a lot of good factors that affect mortgage banks that are very positive. The economy is coming back. Housing is getting better. And well-run mortgage banks are doing really well. Some are doing great. They're growing and they are able to increase their capital to meet these new requirements, either by retaining capital or by attracting third-party investors. Here's the key. Well-run mortgage banks do things that make them successful. And one of the biggest strategies for success is to carefully measure their activity and their next steps. Something I call measure twice, cut once. Measure twice, cut once. You know, it's a technical term, also known as quantitative reasoning, but we'll stick with measure twice, cut once. You know, a friend of mine installed new carpet in his house several years ago, and one of the doors in the bedrooms wouldn't shut because the new carpet was thick. So they took the door off, took it outside, cut the door, brought it back, hooked it up, and it still wouldn't shut right. And as they were looking at the door, the wife was sticking her fingers through the top of the door because they had cut off the top of the door and not the bottom. It is so important to measure twice, cut once. Make sure you're cutting off the right end of the door. The sad reality is many companies cut twice and measure once. They do things and then have to do it over again. That is really, really inefficient. It's important that we very, very carefully measure our activities. you know, one of the things that we see out there is with all the changes we're seeing in the industry, we're seeing folks getting into paralysis, decision paralysis, analysis paralysis, or also the ostrich effect, believing that it'll just be okay, it'll all go away, and we'll be able to pay loan officers commissions like we always have. Well, you know, that's not ever going to be that way, at least for the foreseeable future, and we have to adapt, accept the fact that things are changing. And one of the ways to do this is to get advice. Successful companies have boards of advisors, they have board of directors. All big Fortune 500 companies have boards of directors, lots of very experienced folks with gray hair, unless they're women, but very experienced people on these boards giving advice to businesses. And mortgage companies need help from people who can give good advice and need access to people with gray hair. And Dave, just so happens you have gray hair too. You'd be able to help these guys sort through the next steps. You know, in getting good advice, it's important to then take action. Like Ross Perot says, if you see a snake, kill it. If a branch is losing money, fix it. Well, that presumes that you know a branch is losing money. That means you've got loan-level reports. It's not about volume alone. Volume alone doesn't tell you the answer. You have to look at profitability through loan level, origination income, application income, processing income, appraisal expenses, secondary marketing spreads, all these together at the loan level detail is what it takes to really evaluate a branch or an originator or a region. You need to get those reports. It's also important that we do what we do best. You know, a lot of times we'll need access to a lawyer for contracts or various issues, but not many of us actually have lawyers on staff full time. Well, what about accounting? Mortgage banks should focus on what they do best, which is making loans. Let's let the experts deal with legal issues and do the same thing for accounting. Getting these loan-level profitability reports is difficult. We need to get with people who are accounting experts who can do this for mortgage banks. If a mortgage bank doesn't know how to do it, don't just assume you're not going to get the report. Hire somebody who can do it for you. CPA firms, our firm, can help get this information. It is complicated. Not just any CPA knows how to do it. You need to get a group that is mortgage banking experts. The key through all of this is to react quickly to financial issues, measure your business carefully, measure twice, cut once, get support from experienced advisors, create a plan, and implement changes to make your business better. Well, Dave, that's it for the Profit Doctor. I'm heading back to the convention floor.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track.
Housing Wire ran a story by Paul Jackson last week called A Little Bit of Sanity, Please. I really appreciated this story because Paul does a great job of breaking down what appears to be serious issues into what they really are. For example, he dives into an explanation of robo-signing and how it's inappropriately being cited as the reason for problems with affidavits, when in reality, no problem exists in many of the cases. He then turns his attention to MERS as an inappropriate scapegoat, and then wraps things up by pointing out that there are indeed real problems in the mortgage banking space, but that those issues are being ignored while we're all distracted with foreclosure gate. Hear, hear, I totally agree. Again, you can find this story by Paul Jackson at housingwire.com. And speaking of real issues that are going unnoticed, Reuters ran a blog posting by Felix Salmon called The Mortgage Bond Scandal FAQ. Felix digs into how pools of loans were audited by companies like Clinton and Allenhill, but that the results of those reviews, which often uncovered loans that were below underwriting guidelines and shouldn't have been in the pool, were literally ignored by rating agencies and investors. It is very well written and does a great job of explaining a complex mess. Their conclusion? Lawsuits from investors will be starting soon. You can see this blog posting by Felix Salmon at blogs.reuters.com. Coming at you from the MBA conference in Atlanta, those were the stories that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with D&D, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lickin' on Lending Show or online at dndinc.com.
Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. This is Dave Lickin'. We've got a special program today. We're talking with about a special program with PMI Mortgage Insurance Company, which is in partnership with Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco. Special guest joining us from PMI today is Mark Foley, Vice President of Homeownership Prevention Initiative. Boy, that's a big, long mouthful there, Mark. You have to help me with that one. John Ballard, Vice President of Field Operations. And from Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco, Rick Harper, who is Vice President of the Program Services and Director of Housing. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
Thank you.
You bet. I want to get right into this. I'm going to start off by directing some questions at you, Mark. Let's talk about the financial counseling programs and what you at PMI are doing that you're rolling out right now that are the first of it. I think it's first of its kind. Am I correct, Mark?
It is, Dave.
That is really exciting. In the broader context of what you're trying to do, help our listeners understand what you're doing to help mortgage servicers and homeowners with the ongoing foreclosure crisis. And what are you doing to support homeowner retention programs such as HAMP?
Thank you, Dave. Great question. And the foreclosure crisis has kind of put us in a situation where we needed to change the way that we were doing business. The volumes of foreclosures, certainly that's well publicized in the media. We have two approaches that we do, essentially. One is kind of a facilitation approach that we work with mortgage servicers, and the other is to supplement or augment what they're doing relative to their homeownership retention and their loss mitigation initiative.
That's great.
Which are certainly not new to the industry.
Yeah, Mark, let's get into it. Go repeat those two. So you have two specific programs. One is for – let's go through those real quickly again. I made some quick notes as you were writing that, and I don't think I got them right. I want to make sure our listeners get that correctly.
Well, let me start with what we do to facilitate for the mortgage servicers in particular, because they're the ones on the front line dealing with the homeowners out there. The first thing that we have that's really key to our approach and our strategy is our delegated servicer program. And this is a program that really allows servicers to move quickly through the process and approve loan workout transactions, such as HAMP, loan modifications, perhaps even short sales, without first having to get PMI's approval before they close
the transaction.
That's
the delegated part. So, I mean, they do not have to work with PMI directly to do this, which is hence the delegated part of it. Okay? Good.
Exactly. And another thing that we do is we have a trade association called MICA, the Mortgage Insurance Companies of America, and representatives from each company, we work together to do things like standardizing processes and, in particular, reporting. You know, so much of what we do is reliant upon reporting that we get from the mortgage servicer. And to the extent that we can make it easy to do business and report information to us in a standardized format, makes their jobs a lot easier.
I would assume standardization is going to go a long ways to kind of easing that burden, and because it's got to be just horrific what's going on in the servicing departments across the country.
They're definitely challenged, no doubt about it, David. And talking about, I mentioned supplementing their work, and this is really what's new to the mortgage insurers in the industry, where we're actually reaching out and engaging homeowners directly. So,
Did I hear that correctly? PMI is engaging homeowners directly? That's exciting.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's very exciting, and we've had a lot of success with it. But let me give you some context. You know, we conduct these bar outreach, what we call bar outreach call campaigns, and we contact homeowners for some reason may not have been able to be engaged with their servicer. You know, typically we find that this may be because they've attempted to contact their servicer but without success. Or a lot of cases, you'd be surprised how many people are just reluctant to contact their mortgage servicer and ask for assistance.
Got to understand that.
We also, as part of our strategy to supplement results of the mortgage servicers, we employ a series of on-site PMI loss mitigation specialists, and they are embedded in servicer shops throughout the country. And their primary goal is to augment the number of loan workout transactions that a servicer can accomplish, with a focus being on homeownership retention.
That has got to be something that's welcomed by the servicers. I mean, you're actually embedding people in the servicing departments. Did I hear that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
That is a great partnership program. How are the servicers receiving that? Is that something they're opening the doors to and embracing and say, come on in, or is there a resistance?
Well, yeah, I think for the most part they've embraced it. You know, capacity being what it is, there's been rapid expansion over the past few years of many servicing shops. They don't have a lot of room.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd be surprised at some of the hurdles that you do have to overcome in order to accomplish this. But once we've got someone embedded, it's been tremendously successful. We've got someone right there that can take a case and provide them with a real-time decision.
I think that is so encouraging. Any servicers out there that are in our audience listening to this, you should, if you have not contacted PMI and got a program like this going to help you, you should be jumping at it. Let's talk about the results. You mentioned that something about results just a moment ago. What has been realized from these initiatives? What are the results at this point?
Well, let me share just a couple of things with you and your audience here. So far, since January of 2008, which was really kind of the inception of what we call our Homeownership Preservation Initiative Group, since through June of this year, we have reached out to over 217,000 homeowners.
That's significant.
To educate them and provide information on their options, help them prepare for and work towards a resolution with their mortgage servicers. And that has culminated in over almost 60,000 families as a result have been able to retain their home. And in
60,000?
60,000. Yep.
That's excellent.
60,000. And in addition, our efforts have helped just over 15,000 homeowners avoid foreclosure through what we would call like liquidation programs, like a short sale or pre-foreclosure sale or a deed in lieu of foreclosure, which is a much more respectable exit than the foreclosure.
That's amazing. You mentioned something about the delegated servicer program. How easy is it for servicers to complete the loan modification programs under HAMP for the insured loans?
Well, PMI has fully delegated really almost all retention workout options or solutions, including HAMP, with very few limitations. And that's not unique to PMI, certainly within the mortgage insurer industry. Obviously, we want to support in any way that we can to allow homeowners the best opportunities for retention, to stay in that property.
Yeah, so
important. we don't want to create impediments in the review process that the servicer has to go through. They've got a lot of documentation that they need to review, and certainly they don't need an additional handoff to the mortgage insurance company for review. So it's not to say that every case goes through that way, but certainly the vast majority do.
Yeah, I would assume that's going to be a much smoother process if you can get into the delegated servicer program, I'm assuming. But some of the loans are ending up in short sales, and let's talk briefly about that. Short sales are certainly happening at record levels and not without problems and some long approval times. Tell our audience a little bit about what you understand or inform them about short sales.
Well, you are 100% correct. They are happening at record levels within the industry. I don't think that we've ever seen the volume of short sales that we have seen in the past 2 years, and will continue to. It is certainly a very viable solution as a workout alternative to foreclosure, and we do allow short sales to be approved under, again, our delegated servicer program. But, of course, in that case, we do have a claim that is the result from that. So our delegation parameters are a bit more restrictive than they are on the loan modification side.
That makes sense.
And I can tell you, one of the things, Dave, that we hear quite frequently is, well, you know, particularly from realtors, is that, well, we're frustrated with the amount of time that it takes to get a short sale through the process.
Oh, yeah.
We've worked hard to make sure, obviously we recognize that. We know that buyers are not going to wait out there for forever.
Yep.
And they're very anxious to know the result of their offer. So we do our best to turn any deals that have to be submitted to PMI for approval around very quickly. And we do that on average within 5 business days from receipt of a complete short sale package.
That's significant. That's great. That's excellent. Mark, that is very encouraging. With so many servicers stretched to the max capacity and resources for them that they have that are so thin, it sounds like on-site loss mitigation would be a big help to them. Tell us about tell our listeners about PMI's on-site loss mitigation program. John, if you could get into that a little bit.
Sure, Dave. Thank you. You know, we've been real successful with having an on-site program for our servicers. And to Mark's point earlier, our real goal there is to facilitate what the servicer does by making their job easier and removing obstacles and the things like Mark said, delegation and standardized reporting and all those things to make it easier to service a PMI insured or conventional loan. And then the supplement part of that comes to helping them and being additive to their efforts. So we provide an on-site resource for some of our larger servicer shops where we have some really highly experienced individuals, many of these folks, 20-plus years of mortgage servicing experience, lots of management experience, who are there to take the leads that are generated by our borrower outreach group and serve up well-qualified retention workout candidates, modification candidates, really on a fully documented package, on a silver platter, so to speak, to try to help provide that extra resource to handle a lot of these borrowers that the servicer may not have capacity to reach everyone.
And, John, are we talking about these are the folks that are embedded, that PMI is embedding in the servicing operations? Let's be clear on that. Is that what you're talking about?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
At first, some of the servicers, I think, might have been a little leery about having somebody in their shop, concerned that it might be an audit function or that we were going to be looking over their shoulder and telling them what to do. But really, I think for those that we work together with, we've come to understand it's a real partnership effort, and it's worked extremely well. And we provide an additional resource for those that are capacity constrained.
So the motives are pure and their motives are clean. There's no bad. There's nothing going on here. You're here to help.
That's right. Absolutely.
That is such an encouraging program. Folks, stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this break. We've got special guests with us. Mark Foley, Vice President of Homeowner Prevention. I don't know why I'm having so much trouble with that, Mark. John Ballard, Vice President of Field Operations. And we're going to be talking just in a minute right after the break with Rick Harper, who is Vice President of Program Services and Housing, or Director of Housing for the Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. We have special guests, Mark Foley, with Vice President of Homeownership Prevention Initiative there at PMI, along with John Ballard, Vice President of Field Operations with PMI. And we're about ready to get on the program here in just a minute. Rick Harper, Vice President of Program Services and Director of Housing with Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco. I can't wait to get in and find out more about that. John, let's continue our conversation a little bit about what you're doing with the embedded staff that you're putting in with servicers to help manage and mitigate help loss prevention, helping keeping homeowners in their homes. Let's continue with that. It seems like PMI is certainly doing a lot to work with homeowners along with the servicers. Isn't that an unusual for a mortgage insurance company? I've never heard of it.
Well, it really is, Dave. You know, a few years ago, we kind of just cheered our servicers on from the sidelines, but we really kind of jumped onto the playing field with them to help support their efforts and provide additional resources. With everybody being capacity constrained and having a lot of loans to deal with.
Yeah, there has been certainly a lot of loans, and it's all over the press what's going on there. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Rick Harper's group there at the Consumer Credit Counseling Services. I'm fascinated about this partnership you guys have going.
You know, it's been a great, great partnership, relationship, working together to reach out to borrowers. And one of the things that Rick's group does for us is really to provide a great education for the borrower. So I'm really going to be interested in hearing Rick share that with us. We've got several campaigns we're currently working on, one of which is for servicers who've had difficulty in reaching certain borrowers. Some borrowers may have been a little reluctant to respond to the servicer. We've been getting lists from our servicers of some of those loans, and have been sending those no-contact cases to CCCS of San Francisco. And Rick and his group reach out to those folks and do some great work as kind of a neutral third party in engaging the borrower and gathering financial information and serving up good qualified leads to our loan servicers. So that's one of the programs.
Excellent.
One of our more recent programs with CCCS has specifically involved loans that have recently gone all the way through the modification process, become a completed mod, and now we want to ensure that those borrowers have a good chance of success and don't redefault.
Yeah, that is so important because the statistics are just so bad right now. The number of people that haven't been modified that have gone right back into delinquency. That's an exciting program. Well, go on. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, fortunately, we're starting to see some improvement in that with the recent program enhancements and qualification criteria having gotten a little better, so the redefaults are improving. But right after we get notice from a servicer that a borrower's completed their modification, we're referring those cases out to CCCS of San Francisco.
Let's go back. Wait, stop right there. When do you refer them out?
Right after we receive notice from the servicer that a loan modification has been completed.
So early.
Well, absolutely. We've got programs involved earlier, but this one is specifically targeted at those who have completed the process, they've got a fresh loan modification, and we want to make sure that that doesn't redefault.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exciting. That is exciting, John. I can't wait. This is a brilliant move. Who came up with this at PMI? I want to celebrate this. Was this your idea? Mark?
Well, you know, I think we'll give Mark credit for that one.
Yeah, Mark should. Well, with his title, Home Ownership Prevention Initiative, I guess so. Let's get Rick into the conversation. Rick, it sounds like you got a great program going with PMI, and if, you know, I understand that this has been going on for a period of time.
Dave, thank you. Yes, it has. PMI has been a great partner of CCCS of San Francisco for over 15 years, and
this is not new.
Well, no, it's not. In fact, we started making outbound calls to help families who were delinquent back in the mid-90s, and PMI instigated that, believing that we could offer financial education early on to try to determine the reason for the default and then help people put the pieces back together. As John alluded to, many, many families, however, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, when the defaults have increased, have for whatever reason, embarrassment, they don't believe that there's anything the lender can do, or they have the misconception that the lender actually wants the property. So for those folks, when PMI shares that information with us that these are what we call no-contact families, we reach out, and we've had a great deal of success in convincing them that if they want to stay in their home, there are things that they can do, and all they need to do is just spend some time with us, help us put the pieces together, conferencing the servicer, create a plan to get them back on track.
Rick, how are you finding the receptivity from the consumers you start working with? I think it's great that PMI is getting you involved early in the process. I mean, right after that loan modification is done, you're involved there. How is it being received?
Well, let me just say this program where the people are current is brand new. We think it's the only pilot of its kind in the country where an insurer has stepped up and said, we want to provide a financial analysis to people to keep them on track, to keep them current. And I can tell you that for the last 3 weeks, we've only been in this thing for 3 weeks, we have received almost 8,000 referrals from PMI. We've reached out to a little over 3,000, actually made contact with almost 700 families, and we're in the process now of trying to determine what the characteristics of this group are going to be. A couple of things. Number one, the people are very, very appreciative of their insurer providing the service. Number two, we've stumbled across families that are already having difficulty making that very first payment.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So that we've been we've been able to conference them in with the servicer right away to see if there's anything that we can do to to get them back on track if it looks like that the budget that we're examining can't be improved beyond, you know, the scope that, that we have. And so I think as this thing, Dave, unfolds, we're going to see that we are going to be able to do something about this retention, because so many people just don't have a handle on the rest of their expenses. And
yeah,
you know,
so
PMI
true.
Realizes that while the mortgage payment's the most important, if we can put the rest of their financial life in order, they've got a better chance.
That is so true. Tell me, you're located primarily in San Francisco. Are you only doing product in San Francisco, or are you helping people all around the country?
Oh, no. We're nationwide. We have a call center here in San Francisco, which lends itself very well to the rest of the country in terms of the hours of operation. And so we're really available whenever the whenever we can reach the family or whenever they need us. We're going to have somebody here to work with them.
So just because it's called Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco, you're a nationwide program.
That's correct.
Good. And how many counselors do you employ? I mean, tell us a little bit about your organization. I'm just really very encouraged by this, what I'm hearing.
We have a very active housing program. We are approved by HUD as a housing counseling organization. We provide the full range of pre-purchase, post-purchase, default, reverse mortgage counseling that's required, as you know, for people going into reverse mortgage counseling. And today we have somewhere close to 80 counselors doing mostly default and some pre-purchase, but the big emphasis in the last 3 or 4 years has been on the mortgage default side of the business.
Man, when did your organization form? Give us a little information background on
We've been serving San Francisco since 1969. We're part of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, a member of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, which means that, you know, we have audited financials, we're an accredited agency, and we really started our first nationwide effort with PMI back in the mid-90s, helping them provide education that was required under an affordable product that Fannie Mae had at the time.
I got to tell you, I want to bring John and Mark into the conversation here and just bring our listeners all the way up on how they can get a program like this going and how they can work with PMI. I'm going to toss this back to you, Mark, real quick, and then please stay on the line, Rick, because I got a bunch more questions for you. Mark, how can people get connected with you on this program?
Well, Dave, we are very actively engaged with mortgage servicers. So anywhere there are PMI insured loans, we are in regular conversation.
You're already in there.
Yep.
Very good. And if someone that is there any portfolio size, Mark, that is too small for you guys? You're only working with the big guys, or are you working with virtually anybody? You said, if I heard you correctly, say that if it's got an PMI insured loan in there, you're there.
That's true. We are looking at our entire insured portfolio, if you will, and you know, our on-sites typically are placed, we mentioned earlier, talked about that, they are typically placed in the larger shops, the larger servicing shops, because that's where the need is, frankly.
Well, this is, I got to tell you, obviously, the bigger shops have just got a tsunami of delinquencies they're working with, unprecedented. I've been in this industry now 37 years. We've never seen anything like this, Mark, so it's very exciting. Rick, what an amazing program. Is this something that's exclusive to PMI?
This program, as far as we know, it is exclusive to PMI. And we certainly, in the nonprofit side, our primary concern is keeping the family in the home and to have someone step up to the plate and to provide a service to people who are current so that we can ensure that long-term success is absolutely unique.
That is, I kind of compliment PMI and what a brilliant, brilliant job. And Mark, my hat's off to you for bringing this about. John, what have we not talked about in this program that we need to make sure that our listeners understand? Again, our listeners are a broad range of mortgage personnel across the country. We've got some realtors out there, but mostly it's mortgage personnel. What haven't we talked about that you really think is important our listeners understand about this program?
You know, Dave, the borrower outreach program is really there to help and supplement our servicers' efforts and to help the borrowers retain home ownership. And so we look forward to working closely together with our servicers. We always encourage the borrower to continue and work with their loan servicer, to communicate with that loan servicer, and maintain that open line of communication. I think that's critical.
Yeah.
So we look forward to working together in partnership with our loan servicing customers and helping in any way we can. If they have any particular segment of their portfolio where they might need some help, we have account directors assigned to most of our larger accounts, and working together with those account directors, we can target and help them work any segment of the portfolio that might need special attention.
If there's some servicers out there, John, that are saying, you know what, I'm not familiar with this, I need to talk to you about this, who should they contact at PMI, and what's the best way to get signed up for this program?
That's a great question, Dave. PMI's Home Ownership Preservation Initiatives Department. The best thing
added
to do
up
is
by Mark Foley, nonetheless.
That's right.
That is great. Mark, how can people, is there a special number that they can call into if they want more information? It sounds like you guys have got it covered pretty much out there. So,
let me add to that we, PMI has set up a web resource site that I'll give you the address. It's got some great information out there. It's open to anyone, a consumer, a mortgage servicer. And it does have contact information. It's www.homesafepmi.com.
Perfect. We repeat that one more time.
www.homesafepmi.com.
Perfect. Rick, how can people get a hold of you to talk to you more and learn more about your program?
Dave, we are nationwide. They can check our website out at www.housingeducation.org, or they can call us on our toll-free number at 800-777-7526. That's 800-777-7526.
I mean, gentlemen, I tell you, my hat's off to PMI. No wonder, Mark and John, that PMI is the leader in this industry. I just very, very impressed with this program. And as you guys know, I do a fair number of TV broadcasts. I'm going to get you introduced to some producers. This story's got to get told out to everybody. Mike, gosh, this has been very, very encouraging. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on the program. Appreciate it so much.
Thanks for having us, David.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet.
Hey, thank you so much. And thanks to our partner there at CCCS for helping homeowners.
That's all about it. We're here to help homeowners. Folks, we've been blessed to have, again, with us, Rick Harper, Vice President of Program Services and Director of Housing at Consumer Credit Counseling Services of San Francisco, along with Mark Foley and John Ballard of PMI. Gentlemen, thanks again so much. Have a great day. And we're all at the Mortgage Bankers Conference here in Atlanta. So if you get a chance, swing by the PMI booth and you'll learn more about it. Thank you so much. Have a great day, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that just about wraps up the program for today. We appreciate you listening in today. And hopefully you'll come back each and every week and tell others about it. Remember, you can go to www.lickenonlending.com, and you can, upper right-hand corner, you'll see an opportunity for you to register for weekly updates about upcoming guests. We keep you informed if you'll register. We'll keep you informed on what programs we have coming up in the future. It'll be a valuable resource. Also on the website, you can go on there and download past programs, listen to them, and then also share them around the industry with your friends. We appreciate you giving the word out about the fact that we're here to help mortgage and real estate professionals get the necessary information. Our goal is to be the one-stop shop for you to go, the one place you can go to go get a good digest of what's going on in the industry. Folks, I got to race off to the Chambers Luncheon here at the National Mortgage Banking Conference here in Atlanta. I get to go listen to Sean and Leanne Toohey, who inspired the movie The Blind Side. Great movie, one of my favorite ones. And I get to go listen to Sean and Leanne Toohey talk and about that movie and what went into it. I apologize for my voice. It's being here at the conference, as you might suspect, you do a little bit of visiting, and your voice can go. So I apologize. It's only Monday, and my voice is already starting to leave. So, folks, have a great week. I look forward to talking to you here next week, and we will be back with you each and every week. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody.